Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me are the rest of the week of the Let's Weekenders. Yes, that's what I'm starting to call us now. Fuck you, it's my show. Patrick Mifflin, Filippo D'Onofrio, and Chris Sologi.
So, are we like relatives of the EastEnders, just the Let's Weekenders?
Don't overthink it.
We're the grown-up person, so the kids and the Weekenders.
Yeah. All right, this episode is for September 9th, 2016, and some shit went down this week,
yeah,
as it does every week, but for some weird reason, a good chunk of humanity just took dumb shit pills this week, and it's gonna be a lot of fun for us, at least.
Yeah. It's probably gonna get worse while we get this debate season going on.
Oh, yes. Oh, God, November can't get here soon enough.
Yeah, it's like a month and a half away, and it's like, oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, just cut everybody.
Am I the only one looking forward to the debates themselves?
No, I'm looking forward to them, too, because here's the thing. There's a lot. Hillary Clinton has a lot of faults, but the one thing she's absolutely amazing at is debating. And she's going up against the lightweight, like the overgrown Cheeto who's running as the Republican nominee. She's going to fucking wipe the floor with that man.
She's going to take him behind the woodshed.
It's not even going to be fair. I almost am going to feel sorry for him because she is so OP.
Yeah.
Just keep an eye out for the unscheduled commercial breaks.
Yeah, that's going to be... All right, so before we get started talking about what we've been up to this week, I just wanted to announce really quickly, I mentioned this on the Day Zero update, but we do now have a quote-unquote official email account. So all of those out there who are listening and downloading the show, and we do know you're out there, and we do appreciate if you've got some sort of question or comment, something you just want us to say on the air. Maybe you disagree with us politically or philosophically or, I don't know, emotionally.
Something you want us to cover.
Yeah. Topic. Just send us a mail. It's going to be at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's L-E-T-S, let's, W-E-E-K-E-N-D-E-R-S, weekenders@gmail.com. Okie dokie. So, with that, and I will repeat that at the end of this cast so that you folks can get it in your damn thick heads.
Yeah.
Now,
and I'll put it in the show notes first.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes too. So, with that being said, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, as some of you may know, I moved. So I'm mostly done unpacking. Everything is mostly in its place. I just need to get my turntable and stuff set up, but beyond that, pretty much everything is back to where it should be. So yeah, I'm now in an apartment that actually looks like an apartment and not a game of shove it. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beyond that, I've been, you know, watching Mythbusters and catching up on Mr. Robot, which has actually picked up quite a bit. Because the first 4 or 5 episodes of season 2 was mostly Elliot being really depressed, which of course makes me really depressed because he's just kind of, yeah, he's really dark, you know. so the fun stuff has started to happen now, and yeah, it's a good show, definitely worth watching.
Yeah,
there's a really nice 1980s style segment in one of the episodes that you should definitely check out. It's a fun show. So I've been watching that, but besides that, doing some reading or listening, as the case may be. Got the last book of the Iron Druid Chronicles staked. Good, fun urban fantasy style book. Definitely kind of fun to check out, especially if you like all of the pantheons of the gods who all happen to know each other for some reason. Yeah, apparently Thor is kind of a douche, just
yeah.
So
well, he's kind of a douche, and and Norse myth anyway.
Yeah. It's also dead now, but that's besides the point. And, yeah, seeing as next week the second book of the Chronicles of the Fallers series by Peter F. Hamilton is coming out, I'm going through the first one, The Abyss Beyond Dreams, again, and, God, that book is long.
It's Peter F. Hamilton. It wouldn't be a Hamilton book without it being being of an ungodly length.
Yeah, ungodly length, very detailed. You'll pretty much figure out what color socks these people like, and lots of sex too, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that going on. But,
well, yeah. It's the future, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, if you don't have to worry about sexually transmitted diseases or, well,
unexpected
dying.
Pregnancies.
Yeah, or dying for that matter. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good so far. And kind of, I forgot how much of an idiot Slavasta was. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, waiting for the second book to come out, and hopefully I'll be done the first one by then, and then I'll be playing Bioshock that same week, so that'll be fun too.
Yeah.
So that's been my week. How about you guys?
All right, what about you, Pat?
I'm putting the finishing touches on my modern deck for Magic the Gathering. I got my full playset of Inkmoth Nexus, so I'm very happy about that because that was one of the most expensive sticking points of this deck. Wrapping up Chunibyo Demokai Gashitai, down to the last four episodes of that. And it's still a really fun series. I highly recommend it. I still haven't found anything to fill the bleach void that is now gaping in my life. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking around. I'm probably going to be starting Arslan Senki here in the next few days.
Yeah. There's all, have you... I'm going to take a wild guess. You've seen Gurren Lagann, haven't you?
I've not.
Oh, well, there's your answer right there.
It's only one season, isn't it?
No, it's like a couple. it's like two or three.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little longer than a typical... I thought it was just your standard one season, 26 episode run, and...
Nope. Well, hold on. Let me check, because I could be wrong.
There's 26 episodes I can do in a week.
Yeah.
The
thing about the Gurren Lagann series is that its scope is so massive, and it moves at such a brisk pace that, okay, yeah, it is actually just a 27-episode thing. But the thing is, it moves at such a brisk pace and is just so massive in its scale that it's kind of, sometimes it's a little hard to wrap your brain around it.
Okay.
And there's always the Bakemonogatari.
Yeah,
I've
got that sitting here.
Yeah. Those of you who've never seen the Bakemonogatari or the Monogatari anime series in general, it's by Studio Shaft. And if you've ever seen a Studio Shaft anime before, you know that their chief creative guy, he loves doing really trippy avant-garde shit. And that's the Monogatari series to a T. I mean, it's good, it's easy to follow, but it is fucking weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the first time I tried watching Bakemonogatari, I had to stop just because it was going in so many different places at once, and there was no way that my mind was going to settle down enough to give it my undivided attention at the time, so I just had to quit.
Yeah. It's one of those anime that you kind of want to pause a lot, because...
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to describe to people who haven't seen it before, but basically the thing is the way that it tells its story, there's a lot of, like, text that flashes on the screen, and a lot of, like, atmospheric shit and stuff that you don't see at first. It's just, in general, it's really odd.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah, I've got a few things on here. But yeah, I'm just basically looking for the next series for me to really obsess about. And I don't know if the Monogatari series is going to be it, but it'll definitely get its chance. You know, once I'm mentally settled down and think to watch it in that state, because yeah, it, that is a problem that I run into frequently too. Arslan Sankey is one I'm going to be giving a chance to, which isn't super long. It's just, it just started its second season a month or two ago.
Yeah.
See, I've got JoJo's Bizarre Adventure on here ready to start.
Oh, god damn. That is a...
that is a weird show.
Yeah.
It's a weird manga. Hmm. I mean, it's... JoJo's is just the... It is one of those things that... Okay, so, like, here in the U.S., you can get, like, the earlier volumes now. Viz has actually started putting out the earlier volumes in these nice sort of...
See, this is one that I'd kind of filed under. If it's good enough for Capcom, it's good enough for me.
Yeah. And the whole thing about the JoJo series is that it's a manga that is, it, you know, it's... First of all, it's very obviously it's a Shonen Jump manga. Because it's a lot of fighting and combat, that type of thing. You know, the power of friendship, that type of stuff. But it's, you know, the artwork and the art direction is just weird enough that it also has...
It's very
like,
distinct.
It has that distinct feeling of like a cult hit. And the imagery is just so goddamn weird. I mean, you know, the whole thing about the stands in particular is just all the stuff that, you know, Hirohiko Araki could come up with. And just all the weird... I can't really describe it. It's one of those things you have to see for yourself.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to see, too, because it's like 117 volumes at last I checked.
Oof. Good.
Yeah, it's been around since 1987.
Jeez.
I mean, he doesn't publish in Shonen Jump anymore. He went over to Ultra Jump, which is a monthly publication, right around the time of the 100th volume. But, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a few things on here. Durarara.
Oh, that's a good one.
Fairy Tale, which I downloaded simply because it's a multi... You know, several hundred episode thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really what I'm after now, because you don't lose a series like Bleach and, you know, search for a 12-episode series to fill the gap.
Yeah.
Get Backers is on here.
Mm. Have you? What about Baccano? Have you seen Baccano?
I have not.
I want to put that on there. That's a keeper. All right.
Attack on Titan, of course.
Yeah, at least that's only one season right now. So,
Nisekoi.
All right, we get it. You got a lot of anime.
Yeah, I'm just going over some things that I can pick up next.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Chris, what about you?
So, I'm continuing on in games, the Game of Thrones, second book. Still pretty early in the book part, but I finished the second season of the show.
Yeah,
and it continues on with my general hatred of Joffrey.
Of course,
from the very beginning, you just wanted to just smack the shit out of him.
Yeah. No, he was pretty much you were pretty much meant to hate him from the very. From
That's
the first page he shows
I
up.
Like Tyrion. Yeah. He just smacks the shit out of him from the beginning.
Yeah, you'll continue to hate Joffrey for a good several months now, I think. Depending on how long it takes you to get through the third book.
Yeah. Second season ends weird. Like it ends sort of like midway through a bunch of different plot lines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That now I'm just waiting to get through the second book before I move on to the season 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird season.
Yeah. Have you spotted the pattern yet, so Chris?
I don't know.
Yeah. Episode 9 of every season.
Okay.
Always. This is a big event.
I'll be rewatching it when I get closer to the end of the second book, so
yeah,
I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
Sort of on a topic that we'll be talking a little bit more about later, I watched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Timely. And
still great. And that's a movie that when we were kids and watching that, we got a completely different vibe out of it than you get as an adult.
Oh, yeah.
You notice that he's just a psychopath through that whole thing.
Yeah.
Just from the beginning where he's like struggling to walk with the cane and shows that you can't just trust anything he's doing.
Yeah.
Right.
The only thing that you really get out of that as a kid is the whole tunnel scene. Like, this is weird.
And that weird little monologue he does during it.
Yeah.
And I really love just how when any of the kids start doing bad things, he's like, no, stop, don't. Just like the most weak attempt to try to stop him.
Yeah.
Just a really, really great performance from him, Gene Wilder, and I was reading some of the stuff about Gene Wilder and sort of about the kids. Obviously, they're adults now.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely talk very highly of him, especially that he sort of treated them as adults, not pandered to them as kids, which is probably not something that many child actors get.
Right. Something else I realized at the end of that movie is you realize that the whole tour of the factory was basically one long eugenics experience.
Yeah, it's like a child-friendly version of Saw.
Yeah, basically.
We're just going to put you through all these tests, see who survives. And sort of along that vibe of stuff I watched as a kid, I watched the Animorphs show.
Oh, damn. That's
that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, so I found out that they have this on Google Play. And for not that much, so I grabbed it, especially since I had some coupon codes to make it a little bit cheaper. The book series was something that I really enjoyed reading as a teenager. And tried to pick it up back up a little bit, but they only have the first 8 books on Kindle.
Mm.
I don't know why they're dragging their feet on that. It's like, I think 50, 60 books, somewhere around there. Yeah, the show is obviously from the 90s.
Oh, yeah. It is
creatures that they tried to capture in CG very much evokes that.
Yeah.
It looks real
cheap. Special effects aren't very special.
Nope. Well, there are certain kind of special.
Yeah.
They're hilariously special. It's like, oh, okay. I see. Like when they try to show the Andalites, it's like, you're zooming in real close so you don't have to try to capture the whole being that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's like, here's just the face, the weird furry face. Obviously, the lead on that show, I forget what his name is, kind of came to be a much bigger actor. Sean Ashmore became Iceman.
Yeah.
And the lead on Quantum Break.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I knew him from when he went to like X-Men and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the guy from the Animorphs show. Yeah, so I kind of just binge-watched like the first season of this. One of the key things I remember from the show is just Tobias getting stuck in the Hawk morph. They just do that in the first episode. Just like, fuck it, we'll get this out of the way right now. Like, they just want to get rid of that kid from having to pay him anymore. Something like that, I don't know. But yeah, it's pretty cool. The morphing stuff is just creepy as hell. Yeah. This is 90s CG trying to capture the morph from human to animal back and forth.
Yeah.
It's just real creepy as hell. Yeah, so that's just a weird show to watch. I've also been playing Rocket League. They just put out their big Rumble mode update that adds a ton of stuff. I'm working on doing a video. I'm just trying to get some more crates to drop so I can show that off a bit.
Okay.
But yeah, the Rumble mode itself is just insanity. So if you're familiar with Mario Kart, say you're on, have a considerable lead going into the final lap.
Yeah.
And there are just power-ups raining upon you. That's what Rumble mode is like for 5 minutes. So essentially, everybody gets power-ups. It's just like automatically spawns you. Or not spawns you with it. You just get one every 10 seconds, at least after you use it. There's like a 10-second cooldown. You get a new power-up. And so there's just constant power-ups being used to freeze the ball mid-air. There are multiple sort of like rope type power-ups to either bring you to the ball or pull the ball towards you.
Yeah.
Thing to kick people around, thing to cause your turbo to go nuts. So teleport one just switches places with you. There's one that lets you just run into people and just instant kills.
Yeah.
It's all this just craziness that's going on.
And it sounds like a lot of fun.
Really. It's really fun. It's just like a, if you're playing like the unranked stuff, it's generally pretty cool, casual, just laid back experience.
Yeah.
And this is just even further in that direction. The weird thing is my first match, every time we gave up a goal, somebody on our team just typed trash team in the chat. It's like, really? You're caring about winning in this? Especially when it's a lot of people are just learning the mode, learning the power-ups.
Yeah.
Because I've done plenty of times where I go to do a power-up and just knock it into my own goal. Oops. It's like, oh, here's the rocket, the punching glove. I just knocked it right into my own goal. Okay. So that's just like a quick hit, just launches it across the arena. And I've had good uses of it where I just knock it into the other team's goal. There's other times where I use the plunger, which pulls the ball towards you, just pulls it right into my own goal.
It's like,
it's like, well, I wanted to use it, but that was a bad time to use
it. Oh, shit.
And so they definitely need to have a LMAO chat command to spam when that shit goes off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them already. It's just like, OMG. And I put one on mine, because you can change them. I put one on my it's just, holy cow. That's the closest I can get to just like, what the fuck just happened? There was one, I got a goal. I was using, what was it? I was using something to try to knock the ball into the goal. I hit the ball behind me. I got teleported to the other person right into where the ball was going and then hit it into the goal that way. Like, I had no control of my car, but I got teleported in the right spot to knock the ball into the goal. It's a crazy goal. I have to put some video up of that because I had definitely saved that match. So I'm going to have to capture some of the awesome goals I had and put it up. Because that's going to be a great thing for the like the native capture capabilities on PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah, the share factory.
It's like, here's this the crazy crap that happens.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I've been playing WWE 2K16, which was free for Xbox Live, Games with Gold.
Yeah.
And that game is okay. The submissions are broken, pretty much. The minigame they have you play is this weird one where essentially you are kind of moving this kind of moving these, I guess, like quadrants of a circle around, and you're trying to line up yours with the opponent's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that fills up a circle. And I have never been able to fill up anything.
The trick is to move against it.
So yeah, like it just doesn't really work for me at all. It just doesn't feel good. It's like a intuitive thing. It just feels really dumb idea.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but I can see why they went with it.
Yeah, because I was making my own created wrestler, and they just sort of fill your move set up by default. That ended up being my finisher. I don't know exactly how, but whenever I try to do it, it's like, I can't get anybody to submit of my own finisher because it's stupid. So I changed it into something that's just a normal, just strike. Hit the dude finisher.
Yeah.
So now I can actually win. And the career mode just kind of stinks a little bit because you are so underpowered when you start that. You start at like a ranking of 60, and most of the wrestlers facing are high 70s. And so outside of getting a couple bits of quick skill points to boost some attributes, I was up to like 72 now. But playing it on the normal difficulty is really a struggle, so right now I'm playing on easy, which makes it too easy. But I just want to win and build up some ability to build up my stats.
Yeah.
As I'm working my way through the NXT stuff. And yeah, there's some parts that's kind of fun. They kind of weirdly emphasize trying to build up like an actual good match, sort of using a variety of moves.
Yeah.
But I don't know, the controls just don't really jive with me. Because there's some points where you're just like, oh, you hold the A button to do this move while holding a direction. And other times, like holding X, we'll do this, do grapple moves where it's normally a strike button. It's just really weird stuff. I'm having some fun with it, just purely as like, I like wrestling games. Just don't play them every year because they don't really change that much. But what's cool is they have like a story mode of sort of like looking at Austin's career, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Sort of start a bit in his WCW stuff. They quickly move on to WWF. And what's funny as hell is that they censor the video packages.
Of course.
So every time he says WWF, they censor out the F. So it's just WWF. And I think when he was talking about liquor, I think he was they censor that out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like some weird parts of this. It's like, I know what the hell he's trying to say because I know what Stone Cold Steve Austin is, even though this is early Stone Cold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's just starting to lose his hair and all that.
Yes.
Yes, believe it or not, Steve Austin did have hair at one point.
He used to be stunning Steve Austin.
Yeah.
He had a full head of hair and supposed to be a beautiful guy.
Hmm.
Except he sounds like beard
Steve Austin.
Steve Austin. Really off. It's like, okay, this guy that you know is having like gravelly voice and all that, he is supposed to be a beautiful guy.
Basically, imagine if The Rock was originally like, I don't know, Ravishing Rick Rude or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's old school for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like The Rock came in as like a black power guy.
Yep, he was a member of the Nation of Domination.
Yep. Yeah.
Which was basically a very, very racist take on the Nation of Islam, if we were honest.
Yeah, kind of.
That's what wrestling is.
Yeah.
Veiled racism all over the place.
Yep.
I mean, the WWE had for a long time an Irish wrestler who came out with a little person
dressed like a leprechaun.
Yeah.
They didn't get rid of him until maybe a couple years ago. maybe a year or two ago. He was still on the roster.
Then they had Yokozuna, the sumo wrestler, who was actually Samoan and was from Hawaii.
Yeah. There's the Indian wrestler, the Great Kali.
Mm-hmm.
They had him doing Punjabi matches. He couldn't wrestle.
No.
He's just a big dude.
Actually wrestle.
He didn't look good. He didn't wrestle well. There's this guy who's like, get him the hell out of here.
Yeah, he just kind of stumbled around the ring for about half an hour.
And couldn't even walk correctly.
Yeah.
Didn't really speak English. So just yelled. It's like, get the Big Show back out here, even though we don't really want him either. At least he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Still doing the Picross stuff. Picross.
Picross.
All right.
How about you, Brandon?
Well, I am finishing up Exilia. So you know how I said earlier that, you know, I'd come to that point where everything had started to go balls to the walls bananas?
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Okay.
Oh, I thought that was just an odd little plot twist. No, it goes completely batshit loony later on. and in a good way, but it comes out of completely left field. And all of a sudden, you know, this game that I was playing that had all these messages of things like you know, trying to find peace between humans and spirits, all of a sudden becomes this thing about environmentalism and green energy and... It goes into this just weird.
It's weird, you know, environmentalism and, you know, green energy seems to be a recurring thing in JRPGs. Because that's kind of how Final Fantasy VII started.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them are about the end of the world, so eventually you're going to have, how do we save it?
Yeah.
Well, when, you know, you're the only country that's ever been on the, you know, the receiving end of nuclear warfare, that tends to do things to you.
Yeah, true.
So I got that. I finally got a DVD and I finally got to watch Zootopia.
It's a great movie.
It is an amazing fucking movie. And it's a funny movie, too.
Yeah.
And I don't mean funny as in cute tee hee. No, I mean as in funny as in full-throated, dear God, my sides hurt funny.
it's really, really well written.
That whole segment with the sloths and the DMV was just comedy gold.
Yeah.
I mean, just from the very beginning to the end of it, it's like, oh God, this. They need to end this scene soon because I can't breathe. it's really well written. All the actors do really well. Obviously, the animation is incredible. One of the things I've realized about that movie is the movie definitely has a message behind it, but I think the mistake that a lot of people tried to make when watching this movie was trying to take sort of the overall situation in the movie's universe and somehow create some sort of like equal, something like it was some sort of direct relation to things that were happening in our world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, okay, so, all right, the movie's been out for a while now, so I'll just go ahead and talk about it. The basic thing behind Zootopia is that Zootopia itself is the city, this big sprawling city in which mammals, both predator mammals and prey mammals, and that's important, by the way, because you'll notice there's no fish or birds. It's all, you know, so fish and poultry is still there for the meat eaters. And, you know, they've built this society in which they can all function. So, like, each, there's, like, sections of the city that are specifically built to help certain types of animals. So, like, there's the desert area for all the desert animals, the tropical area for all the tropical animals. There's a whole part of the city that's, like, in miniature size for, like, mice and gerbils and such. And so they've built this very functional, diverse society. And one of the heroine of this particular film is Judy Hopps. She's a little rabbit who wants to become a police officer in Zootopia. And she basically, as the story goes on, a good chunk of it at first is about her overcoming adversity, specifically, you know, the prejudices about the fact that she's a tiny little prey animal, you know, and so she just goes with it, and how they kind of just sort of discount her and, you know, just give her all the, because they don't want her to, you know, they don't think she can handle the major jobs. But what happens is about, I think about halfway through the movie, they discover that a lot of the prey animals are suddenly going what they say savage. You know, they regress back into their more primal instincts and start attacking everything like wild animals. And so what happens is they're trying to find out, why is this happening? And then it's brought up, and Judy herself, she goes on to like a press conference, and she says, you know, well, maybe it's biological. And then there's like all these images of photographs of like all these animals have gone savage wearing muzzles, which, for those of you who don't know, there's the other protagonist of the film, which is Nick Wilde. He's the fox, and there's a backstory to him about that. And so after that, the movie goes into this huge, you know, thing about, like, you know, there's like people trying to hold a peace rally, and you know, there's extreme tension between both predator animals and prey animals. And, you know, the whole sort of message behind the movie is, you know, things like prejudice and, you know,
Segregation,
systematic oppression, things like that. But the thing is, and that's a good message, but the problem is people kept trying to make the sort of overall, and this wasn't really the film doing this, this was people who were watching it, were trying to take the sort of overall conflict in the film and trying to make it like a direct allegory to things that were going on in our world, like obviously the Black Lives Matter movement and police brutality. Stuff like that. But people kept forgetting, you know, there was a general message about prejudice and stuff in our, in Zootopia, but your people make the mistake of trying to take that and somehow relating it to our world.
Yeah.
You know, that there's a general message there. It's not supposed to be a direct reference to it.
Yeah.
So that's when you get people talking about, well, you know, the predator-prey thing isn't a really good, you know, a good allegory for, you know, racial tensions. It's like, well, no, that's because that's not what they were trying to do. So, yeah, definitely get that movie. It is an amazing film to watch. And it's one of those movies you'll want to watch more than once, because there's a lot of stuff in that movie that you won't see the first time.
Yeah.
Because they pack so many things into it.
Yep.
Also because it's just worth watching more than once. It's that good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I got that. And, of course, reading, which I usually do. Nothing really major to say on that front. I did... okay, so I did get this book called The Everfiend, which is part of the Talon Stormbringer series, and it's written by a gentleman. I've mentioned this with both Pat and Phil before. It's a guy named Randy Ellefson. And Randy Ellefson, first of all, is an amazing musician, first and foremost.
Yeah.
But he's also started his writing career, and I wanted to support his work, so I got a copy of his first. It's a novella. It's definitely a first. It's obviously a first. Has first book syndrome, but it's pretty good for what it is.
Hmm.
You know. So also, I went ahead and on the other front of musicians becoming speculative fiction writers, I went and got a copy of a book called, called Shadows Bear No Names. It's by a Turkish heavy metal musician named Ogunov Kanatan, and if you ever get a chance, go on his website. He's got some great stuff music wise on there. He was originally the lead singer for this prog metal band called Dreamtone, and then he went and started a solo project called Magi, and he released this amazing concept album called Skies Fall, and he got some amazing people to work on it. Good stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. I got it doing 2-day shipping on Amazon, so it should be here Monday. And that's pretty much it. Anybody else?
Yeah, I did want to actually add something, because I know you love awful movies, Brandon.
Yeah.
I got a recommendation for you, because I just came across it this week, and I watched it, and it was so awful, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
I have a feeling I've heard of this one.
Yeah, it's a 1962 movie, black and white. It's where basically this doctor, his girlfriend, gets in a car accident, and in order to save her, he just takes her head and puts it on life support, and then it's living in a wall. It is like pure 1960s sci-fi cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just awesome to watch. It's not a great movie. I'm not gonna lie, but yeah, it's one of those things you definitely should watch. It's entertaining.
Awesome.
Apparently, they featured a clip from that in Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. That's one of the things they used to do.
Yeah.
All right then. Well, with all that out of the way, it's once again time for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So I want to ask everybody here, has anybody ever watched any of the National Treasure movies?
I watched the first one.
Yep.
First one. Has anybody watched the sequel?
Yep.
Okay. So Chris, you've watched the sequel. So I guess you're familiar with one of the, main plot points of that film, which was a certain secret society. I'll
look it up on Wikipedia to make sure remember.
So I'm going to just go ahead and say it now. I want to tell everybody here about a certain secret society that's definitely existed in the mid-19th century in the United States. They were called the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Hmm.
They were not a fake creation. They were not one of those Freemasonry, skull and bone type conspiracy things. No, they really existed. And their aims and their goals were every bit as sinister as you could imagine. So basically what you need to know about the Knights of the Golden Circle is that it was made up of a bunch of wealthy Southerners and pro-slavery individuals who had as their goal, their primary objective, was to what they call annex what they called a quote unquote golden circle of territories in Latin America, which included Mexico, all of Central America, Northern South America, and Cuba, and the rest of the Caribbean, that they would then take, they would conquer, bring into the United States, and make them all slave states.
Hmm.
So you're, yeah, that's, Yeah, and if you know anything historically, a lot of slave trade stuff actually happened in Cuba and the Caribbean and a lot of parts of South America back before the U.S. became a country.
Yeah.
And basically these were the guys that – these were, you know, the wealthy pro-slave, wealthy planter people who wanted to expand, you know, the slave trade out into outside of American territory, and ultimately it meant to be an act of imperialism.
Hmm.
You know, take over, you know, conquer these other places and then enslave the inhabitants.
Hmm.
That type of thing. There was just one problem, though. Right around in the mid 19th century, everybody knows the Dred. Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar. I'm going to guess, Phil, you're familiar with this. Something known as the Dred Scott decision.
I am not, but...
Okay, so the Dred Scott decision was a Supreme Court thing. It was Dred Scott v. Sanford. It was in 1856. And basically... Well, basically, and I'll just read off of Wikipedia. Known as the Dred Scott case, it was a landmark decision by the United States Supreme Court on U.S. labor law and constitutional law that held that, and I'm quoting, a Negro whose ancestors were imported into the U.S. and sold as slaves, whether enslaved or free, could not be an American citizen and therefore had no standing to sue in federal court. When that decision went down in the northern part of the U.S., anger against that particular decision grew feverishly. And this, of course, went against the plan, the goals of the Knights of the Golden Circle. So what happened is a handful of the members of the Knights of the Golden Circle also happened to be some of the people that helped found the Confederate States of America. And then what happened is the Knights then changed their objective into what they would do is that after the Confederacy won its independence, it would then start invading all these other territories and create a Golden Circle and sort of a greater Confederacy.
Hmm.
Now, during the Civil War, There were Southern sympathizers that what you would have in the northern states like Ohio, Iowa, Indiana, who would be accused of belonging to the society. And some of those cases, they were actually imprisoned for their activities.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, you know, after the war was over and everything, you know, obviously the society itself kind of just dissolved because, yeah. You know. But some of their members, well, alleged members, because some of these people there have been claims that they were members of the society, but there's never been any hard evidence.
Yeah.
It included such individuals as Buckner Stith Morris, Jesse James, Sam Houston. And, of course, John Wilkes Booth, the guy who shot Lincoln.
Hmm.
A bunch of them supposedly fled to Brazil, and they are the ancestors of what are known as the Confederados in Brazil, which there are, if those of you don't know, the Confederados are a group of – they're people who are descendants of fleeing of Confederate exiles who – made their way over to Sao Paulo,
yep.
And basically shut up shop there. You know, their descendants still live there, and they do occasionally have, you know, Confederado festivals, which are loaded with, you know, antebellum images of the South, mm-hmm. including Confederate flags. Well, I say Confederate flags. As we've said earlier, the quote-unquote Confederate battle flag.
Yeah.
It was even in... They had a specific part in Sao Paulo called Americana, and in the original flag of Americana, it actually had a Confederate emblem in it.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Knights of the Golden Circle. Totally no-shit real thing that existed.
Hmm. A secret society of actual evil people.
Yeah, they were totally real people. And now you know. And that has been yet another example of Brandon's random factoid. And now you're less stupid.
Hey, I guess there are conspiracy theories about them going underground.
Yeah, they're
supposed to be trying to fund a second civil war.
There's even been said that the James Younger gang was trying to get funds for it. But whatever. So, now with that, we now have to go to the asshole of the week. Get it out of the way. No, once again, it is not Donald Trump. Even though, once again, he gave us... We had options.
He's honorary.
We did have some other options besides Trump. We had one of the Bundy brood who tried to use a bunch of sovereign citizen bullshit in order to get out of jail. The person, our asshole of the week, is none other than, I hate even saying his name because it makes me want to puke, Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yeah, he's been getting into some things of late.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
It's kind of like a collective effort. It's the reason why he got in here.
Yeah, so... Do we even need to describe, to explain who this dipshit is?
I would describe him as a psychopath.
Yeah.
Very much the essence of the Trump wannabe.
Yeah.
Sugar daddy sort of thing.
He is literally the human manifestation. Well, I say human. Humanoid. Manifestation of everything wrong with internet troll culture. He's an obvious sociopath. He likes to cause pain and suffering on other people.
Thinks it's his right.
He has done everything from sicking, basically, first thing you need to know, he is only, as far as I know, one of the handful of people who've actually been banned from Twitter. Like, it was literally that bad. Fucking people in ISIS have Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
From what I've read, they've apparently banned a good number of them, but obviously... It's pretty easy to get around it if you put your mind to it.
Yeah. But apparently Milo is basically the representation of everything that is wrong with modern internet culture. He's a racist, anti-Semitic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, homophobic, which is weird considering he is unbelievably gay.
Which he says he's decided to be gay.
Yeah, because he hated women so much.
Because he didn't want to deal with bossy women.
He's responsible. He was one of the big dudes who helped make the Gamergate thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know where this article's at anymore, but I remember reading an article from like 2 years before that where you could tell there's a marked personality difference between that version of Milo and the current version of Milo.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, holy crap.
Yeah, it kind of gone downhill.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he started out as your standard troll, and he somehow found a way to make a living out of it.
Yes. Yep.
I mean...
So what did he do this week?
Well, first of all, we need to just talk about some other stuff real quick. The Gamergate thing is where he actually got famous. Yeah. Then he sort of hitched himself onto the MRA bandwagon, which is where all of his horrible misogynistic bullshit sort of came into existence. I mean, it was already pretty bad with Gamergate, but once he went full MRA, he eventually became the tech guy over at Breitbart. Yeah, that's... Have you checked out Breitbart lately?
Yeah. It's one of those places I try to avoid.
A couple of their articles in searching for some of these things.
Then in 2015, right around the time that Black Lives Matter, you know, started to become a big thing, he basically published a hit piece claiming that Sean King, who's one of the prominent Black Lives Matter activists, was actually white and passing for black, which resulted in a wave of harassment and further defamation, eventually forcing King to actually reveal his personal history and his family. Basically, it turns out he's biracial. So, yeah, he's still black.
Yeah, but
of course,
that's how that works.
Yeah, but of course, Yiannopoulos said it was actually a vindication, wrote another piece claiming King never knew his biological father. Then a month later, he wrote yet another story accusing King of embezzlement, citing several tweets as evidence. For the record, four of those tweets that he cited were from his own Twitter account.
He's like Trump. He just says whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
Whether it's true or not, doesn't really matter. So he's the reason why Sean King occasionally trends on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because these people only remember the accusation, not the actual truth.
Yeah.
And then, at the absolute, he finally found a way to scrape the absolute bottom of the barrel by hitching his proverbial horse to the alt-right movement. And then he started doing stuff with people like American Renaissance and VDare. And then, let's see, I think he even started doing stuff with the Daily Stormer. Of course,
so
they weren't
clear who's who of neo-Nazism.
Yeah. For the record, they weren't particularly fond of him, considering he was both gay and apparently Jewish as well.
Yeah.
Despite that, of course, Yiannopoulos has embraced many of the tropes about Jews running everything from banks to media. Apparently, during his college years, he would actually sport the Iron Cross around town, making jokes about the Holocaust, had a fondness for reading speeches by Hitler.
None of this surprises me.
And this, then, none of this is, even has to do with why he's asshole of the week yet.
No, we're not even. This is just
this
shit.
Is just general asshole.
Shit.
But finally,
the straw that finally broke the camel's back was when he basically encouraged his followers, basically, it means pointed his finger and said, attack. Leslie Jones.
With Photoshop tweets.
With Photoshop tweets. Incredibly racist, horrible shit. So bad she suspended her account, reported Yiannopoulos to Twitter, and then Twitter finally banned him. And remember, this was all because of the Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was retweeting and responding to a lot of the shit she was getting.
Oh, yeah.
People citing Harambe and various apes. Other Ghostbusters, like, oh, there's already a gorilla in the Ghostbusters. All that sort of terrible shit. Which,
yeah.
He got suspended permanently from Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people blame her for that. Not like it's his own fault for getting himself banned.
But you see, that's the thing about Yiannopoulos and his sociopathy. It's everyone else's fault but him.
Man. He's able to create himself as a martyr.
Yeah. And this all culminates into a little interview he gave on ABC Nightline, where he very clearly just showed how much of a slimy piece of shit he really is. I mean, the man completely lacks empathy.
Yeah.
Like, as a trait. It's just, it... You know, You know what, Chris? You could probably explain it better than I could.
So, yeah, ABC Nightline's doing an interview on trolls on the internet, especially in the wake of the Leslie Jones stuff and the hack and all that. And so they got Milo on, and the interviewer is just trying to get to the bottom of why he does it and all this. And the entire time while he's listening to Milo's answers, he just has a huge what the fuck face. Just like, cannot believe the stuff that is coming out of his mouth. Because he just absolutely does not care at all.
No.
He starts talking about, celebrities aren't delicate flowers that need protecting. Because of the attacks, like, shouldn't be responsible for his followers attacking people that he attacks. All this ridiculous stuff his trolling is actually a good thing.
Yeah, he said he was doing God's work.
This is only like a 4 or 5 minute video.
Yeah, and
they probably have a lot more B-roll.
They couldn't show.
And I mean, here's the thing. Who was the guy that was interviewing him?
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, but I mean, just there's like, he's like, you're just an idiot, aren't you? You're just, what are you? Are you 13? And those are literal quotes, by the way. Well, more or less quotes. Yeah. He says those words, maybe not in that exact order, but he's just completely flabbergasted by this guy.
Trying to figure out if he can get him to cut his act.
If he can just finally just, you know, say something. He's like, why do you do this? You know, what is your...
No, it's not an act. He really is a slimeball.
Yeah. He really is a horrible, horrible individual. Yeah.
And he cops to the fact that he doesn't believe in most of the stuff he says.
Mm-hmm.
He just does it to get the reaction that he obviously gets.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing is that none of his followers cop to that.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Yeah. He really is the embodiment of everything that is wrong with the modern internet age.
Yeah.
And just every way possible. You know, he is, you know, when we talk a lot about the alt-right, you know, Milo really is a really good example of everything that's wrong with the alt-right.
Yeah.
In general. And just the types of people it attracts. And I'm hoping that once Hillary wins the election in November, that the alt-right will maybe start to deflate. But I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
But it's, here's the other thing, though. So apparently there was this privilege grant thing.
Yeah, I'll describe this. So back in, I think it was about January or so, he started up this live stream promoting the Yiannopoulos privilege grant. I guess originally he started as some sort of like joke to troll the SJWs.
Yeah.
But it's an actual...
Keep in mind when people like Yiannopoulos talk about SJWs, they're not talking about, like, actual SJWs. They're talking about, you know, decent human beings.
Yeah.
Anybody who's aware of social...
Yeah.
Social issues and all that.
Yeah, just to keep in mind, there is such a thing as a social justice warrior, but the thing you need to know about what an actual social justice warrior is, They don't actually do it because they haven't. They necessarily believe in something. They do it so they can draw attention to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big difference. When people like Milo complain about SJWs, they're complaining about decent human beings who disagree with Milo philosophically.
Yeah. So the privilege grants. I'm looking at the website now. The privilege grant is a bursary available exclusively to white men. In yep. support of their post-secondary education. So a scholarship exclusively available to white men who wish to pursue their post-secondary education on equal footing with their female, queer, and ethnic minority classmates. Suggesting that because of like all the affirmative action sort of stuff, trying to get more minorities and such in college more easily, that apparently white men are supposedly left in the dust.
Don't think that's how that works, but just...
So he okay. claimed he started this charity to do this. Started a big live stream to raise money. Raised at least $100,000. I don't think there's any solid number.
Hmm.
Just people have like estimates between $100,000 and $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, this charity didn't exist yet.
Hmm.
So that's Jogging. Illegal.
Yeah.
That's falsely getting donations for a charity that didn't exist.
Yep.
Whether he actually gets in legal trouble for this, I don't know. But essentially... he was supposed to set up this charity and all this, start taking applications for it in the spring, and hopefully start getting everything going by August, and nothing happened.
Nope, it's September, hasn't been jack shit.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they have finally put out, like, a press release. Milo blames his sudden success. It's like, oh, he's been too busy with his tour and all this to have actually done what he was claiming he was going to do. Hired somebody. I don't recognize the name. And the weird thing is that this press release is on like a news site on the privilege grant page, which you cannot access from the website itself.
Hmm.
You just go to the base page. There's no news link anywhere.
Hmm.
You'd have to specifically search for this
yeah.
site or obviously mess with the URL.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just type Muse instead of news.
All right.
There we
so
go. Yeah.
Let's move
there's
on.
There's a video and all that. And there's more. He was funneling this money through his own company called Caligo Limited, which held the money and eventually got dissolved. He shut it down himself, and the money went into his own account, his bank account.
What a shock.
Yeah.
Claiming that it's going to go into whatever it needs to go into for the charity.
Sure.
Obviously, there's things like other companies are willing to help out with this stuff and hold the money until everything's ready to go and all that. But no, he hasn't done any of that. No evidence that it's been moved to the right spot. The guy that's running things, supposedly they are going to get all this stuff set up for next spring semester.
Yeah, right.
And start taking applications in the fall, essentially pushing the goalpost as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So
people forget about
potential it eventually pays off, but for now it's in limbo for the next few months at least.
Yeah.
Basically, what you need to know is that Milo is a thief.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He basically defrauded people of money and put it in his own account.
Yeah. And potentially, they don't care.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I can forgive theft in a couple of circumstances, but when it's some rich bourgeois fuck like Mio Yiannopoulos. No, fuck him.
Yeah, he brags about having more money than he needs.
So, yeah.
And he's, and all that attack stuff on Lizzie Jones eventually led to the hack, where they had hacked her website. I'm guessing iCloud as well. Essentially posted her license, driver's license, passport.
They doxed her.
Yeah.
Photos, and also posted a picture of Harambe.
Of course.
Just to make sure you know where all this was coming from. Found its way, obviously, to 4chan.
Naturally.
And pretty much he disavows any responsibility, even though
of course he fucking does. All of it.
This
all came because of his shit that he started.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We got to move on from that because I'm gonna be sick if we don't
wash this off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, from somebody who is an absolute piece of slime to someone who is actually turned out to be a pretty stand-up guy.
Doing good things.
Yes. Colin Kaepernick, one of the quarterbacks for the is it the 49ers?
Yep.
San Francisco 49ers?
Yep.
So he became famous, even though, let's be honest, he was kind of a low-tier player until fairly recently, when he decided to protest the treatment of black people, people of color in America, by sitting down during the national anthem. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the way that American sports tend to go, especially football, because the NFL is, on the other, on one hand, full of insane ultra patriots, and on the other hand, filled with people who are completely okay with lying about the effects of concussions in football. But that's another topic entirely. So, you know, stuff like patriotism, salute to the troops, that type of stuff happens all the time in, you know, American football. So, you know, the fact that one player refused to stand up during the national anthem, well, you can just imagine the shitstorm it caused here.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, he did it for the first two games of the preseason, no muss, no fuss.
Yep, nobody noticed.
Nobody made a big deal when he did it the third time. It was just a reporter noticed it and asked him after the game.
Yeah. And he said, and then he said, why are you doing this? He said, because blah, 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 so-and-so. And once that got out, holy shit.
World War IX.
You found out who are actual Americans and who are not.
Right.
It's not who they think it is.
No.
It's the complete opposite.
No. First and foremost, I want to point out, when you got, okay, well, Phil excluded because, okay, Phil, when you went to school, did you guys have anything akin to like a Pledge of Allegiance?
Yeah.
You did have something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so did you do like the hand over your heart type thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was kind of one of those things you know, told that you had to do.
Yeah. Well, we had the same thing here, you know, and the thing is, that whole thing is like, we take that, the people here in the U.S. take that shit super duper seriously.
Fanatically.
Fanatically. Not almost kids, religiously.
Hitler's like, yeah, I gotta almost do this thing.
Yeah. And, you know, it was basically, he's not, the only thing he's doing is he's just sitting down.
Yeah.
That's it. He's not, you know, flipping the bird or giving like a big old black power fist or anything like that. For the record, if he wanted to do both, I would be completely okay with it. But but still, it's caused this massive firestorm. First and foremost, there are certain people who kind of look at it cynically and say that the reason he's doing this, part of the reason he's doing this, is because his contract is about to expire, and he figures that maybe his career is on the way out, so he figures he'll go out with a bang.
That's how you know they're sports fans.
Yeah.
So they take that angle.
Yeah. And of course there's the other angle who thinks that he's a horrible, he's a
traitor.
You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and say it. They think he's a horrible uppity Negro and he needs to shut his mouth. And I know that sounds horrible, but I've heard that shit from my people in my own family. So
the amusing thing is it was a silent protest.
Yeah. And, you know, people were saying, yeah. And the worst part was, is, you know, people saying he's insulting the troops. He's insulting all the people who fought for his freedom. And then
not saying anything.
Yeah. By not saying anything. And yet there was a bunch of veterans, former and current people in the American military who came out in support of him. They may not have necessarily supported his opinion, but they supported his right to do it. You know, saying, look, my buddies died, so he had the freedom to do this. So,
yeah, if they fight for our abilities to do all the stupid stuff we do over here, then they also do it for people to protest.
Yeah, that's something I really hate is these privileged right-wing assholes who, you know, try to go on and on about supporting the troops and shit, and yet they've never had to face anything close to the type of danger that your average American soldier overseas has to go through. You know, don't claim to speak for the troops. They can speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think they've earned the right to.
Yeah.
Far over what any reasonable human being should have to.
Yeah, and they're used as shields as well.
Yeah. We're perfectly okay sending them overseas, but we treat them like shit once they get back. We want to have we want to hold a nice parade and shake their hands, and then we forget that they exist.
That, and we use them as a shield, and like this sort of thing is like, oh, you can't criticize America, you're criticizing the troops.
Right.
Because it's not like there's more to America than the troops.
Right. You know, and then, of course, there's the actual flag itself. You know, and then the actual national anthem.
Whatever you want to represent.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the guy who wrote our national anthem, Francis Scott Key, massive slaveholder and fanatic anti-abolitionist.
Yeah, there are other parts of that poem that we don't use for the national
anthem. Yeah, see, the national anthem is only the first stanza of the poem. There's a bunch. There's like five or six other stanzas afterwards.
There's stuff about slaves.
Yeah, slaves.
See why we don't use it?
Decapitating kings and stuff.
Hmm.
Now the thing about the part about decapitating kings, I would be perfectly cool with that. But
there's only a couple of those left anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, just look. If you disagree with Colin Kaepernick's stance or whatever, you know, that's okay. You know, I disagree with you, but, you know, it's a free country, you know?
Yeah.
It's okay to disagree. Disagreeing with someone does not make them any less of a human being.
Yep.
But it's another thing to try and claim some sort of superior patriotism by trying to suspend the very rights and liberties that people in American history have fought and died for. And I'm not just talking about military either. So,
yeah, there's the whole trying to discredit his credibility for the smallest things.
Yeah.
What's up with his afro? He can't be serious.
They say, even though there's like two or three dudes in the NFL with super duper long hair.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah, because the NFL season started yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There was one person that kneeled. Of course, people freaked out.
Yeah.
There's Megan Rapinoe of the U.S. Women's National Team. Also the U.S. The Professional Women's Soccer League.
Mm-hmm.
She started taking knees, sort of joining him.
Yeah, there's a lot of... The protest is spreading, especially in the NFL.
The amazing thing is the most recent game they're trying to play against the Washington, D.C. team.
Yeah.
They just played the national anthem before any of the players got out. Just to
just avoid
stick
the whole
it
thing.
To her.
Mm-hmm.
It's and they put out a big press release explaining all of this.
Mm-hmm.
All the disrespect she's shown to the troops, like the guy that owns that team is a veteran. It's okay if you have that opinion. That's fine. But you're being real shitty in the way you're treating others that have differing opinions.
Right.
And the whole thing about the NFL especially, they don't have a rule against not standing for the national anthem. They encourage you to, but the team and the league have all been out there saying we support his free speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the other thing. The team's really rallied around him, which is pretty heartening.
Yeah.
No, it's not great when there are other players that are taking shots at him.
Yeah.
Like Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Like quarterback. Lots of white people I saw on the Twitter hashtag stuff. Like, oh, there's lots of white people trying to tell Kaepernick what he is or isn't allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that stuff out of the way, I guess we'll go ahead and mention real quickly, it is the 50th anniversary of the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah. There was a movie this year, Star Trek Beyond, that came out not long ago. There's a new series coming out next year. Star Trek, it's a thing again.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yep. You know, I mean, it disappeared off of television for a while.
Yeah.
So, who here, like, just real quickly, because obviously we don't want to go too long.
Yeah.
What Star Trek series do you think is the best one?
Ooh, that's a loaded question if I ever heard it.
Because I'm Deep Space Nine.
Me, I'm Next Generation.
Well, that's what I meant, Next Generation.
Yeah.
I mean, you got freaking Patrick Stewart. I mean, that's
Yeah, Patrick Stewart, but yeah, Next Generation, once it started getting, like, season 2 and onward,
mm-hmm.
is when the show really started to get into its stride. The first season, it was like they didn't really know what they had at the time. So, yeah, start getting better there. The original series, okay, a lot of people love it. It's not bad.
No.
Just think, if it didn't get canceled, it probably would have gone on to be a really long-running series, because turns out the ratings for that show were actually really, really good in the demographic that they were actually shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, back in the 60s, they weren't actually counting demographic numbers.
Nope.
They were just counting Nielsen households.
Yeah.
Only like 3 stations and 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, kind of one of those things. It's like another one of those things where they didn't know what they had. Yeah.
Yeah, I've only seen the original series.
Yeah.
So.
Original series, it's all right.
It's pretty cool to watch as like they made this in the 60s.
Yeah.
It's really impressive, though it's also cheesy at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you see how far their budget stretched.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, these are definitely stages.
Yeah.
Those guys made an art out of bleeding as much you could out of a dollar.
I just love all their close-up shots during, like, discussions between people. And it's like, here's a real up-close, and you're specifically shining a light right in his face.
The thing is about that show is, it's the original Star Trek series... Its biggest flaw is that it started to suffer from Seinfeld is unfunny syndrome because it broke so many boundaries when it first aired that now it seems almost cliche.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great to watch it as somebody that's seen all of the references first. So it's like, oh, here's the fight with the lizard guy.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what they call his species. I want to say Gorons, but that's Zelda.
Yeah.
Klingons.
It's that's like, what, a two-parter, the whole thing? Or was that just one? It's like...
No, it was a two-parter.
Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, that was...
I have to bring that up because how many of you guys remember that that one episode of South Park where... they hook up a time machine to Timmy's wheelchair, and he ends up going back in time. And the people who build it are those two massive nerds. And one of the argument they have, yeah, how many episodes, because one of them was a two-parter. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so really, I want to say, if you want to get the maximum amount of enjoyment out of the Star Trek, first Star Trek series, go into it watching, remembering that everything you were about to see had never been done on television before.
Yeah.
Stuff that we take so for granted now.
And then, like, you'll get the wow factor off of it.
Yeah. Things like, you know, having that multiracial cast, mm-hmm. one of whom included a character who was Russian.
Hmm.
Keep in mind, we were knee-deep in the Cold War at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Russian, an Asian man, a black
Asian woman. Man, a black woman. You know, you had the alien guy with the pointy ears who they said looked too satanic.
Yeah.
And then you've got, like, all the storylines they did about, like, racism and, you know, the first interracial kiss on television.
Yeah.
Between Kirk and Uhura. You know, and remember the reason that, what's her name who played Uhura? Hold for editing.
Michelle Nichols.
Michelle Nichols, yeah. She almost typing. People forget Michelle Nichols almost quit the show halfway.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't stand the pressure.
And she was getting paid way less than everybody else.
And the only reason she stayed on is because no less a person than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. himself, who it turns out was actually a fan of the show, convinced her to stay on.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And Leonard Nimoy was the one fighting for her to get equal pay.
Yeah.
That sounds logical.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah, and especially cool watching the old series, and it's like, there's like the weird parts where it's like, here it's serialized because they're keeping some of the storylines going between episodes, and then there's some that are just standalones. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, we're going down to this Wild West world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Somehow there's just a lot of these are just like transporting them back into, they just found this old Wild West setting.
It was the Nazi world.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get really clear. They were reusing a lot of old sets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like we had this set back from the 40s.
Yeah.
We sat one for a little while.
But they worked with it.
Yeah. Influenced a lot of shows like Futurama.
Yeah. Had
specific episodes about Star Trek.
They had a whole show dedicated to it. Got almost every one of the original cast except Scotty, because he had passed away that like but yeah they
just
made
up their own
they named him Welshy.
Welshy.
Yeah. All right, so Star Trek 50 years old, how much of the credit should go to Gene Roddenberry is debatable.
Yeah,
but
all right, I'll just before we move on from that, I just want to kind of make a recommendation for you guys on YouTube. There's a series by a friend of mine, L1011 Widebody. He does a series on Star Trek 25th anniversary PC game, where he calls it The Adventures of James T. Jerkface. And he goes through and goes through the scenarios playing all of the jerky, snarky answers that you can pick.
Yeah.
So it's entertaining.
Yeah. I was wondering if he was still doing anything, because I haven't seen any of his hockey videos lately.
Yeah, it's there's stuff coming there now that his hard drive is mostly recovered.
That makes me want a Telltale Star Trek series.
That would be nice.
It'd just be James Kirk and just not answer anybody.
Nope.
Just silent.
Yeah. So with that, we also got to move on. Unfortunately, this is the year 2016, filled with many celebrity deaths, and we lost yet another good one. Gene Wilder, star of some of the greatest fucking movies ever made in the history of cinema.
He's one of those rare actors that wasn't in everything.
No.
Took only the roles that he actually wanted to take.
He only made like maybe one or two genuinely bad movies.
Yeah.
And one of them is actually enjoyable. But yeah, so like a lot of people, my first, you know, exposure to him was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
That's one of those movies that just appeared on afternoon during the summer.
Yeah, or you were like me.
I'm going to watch the rest of this.
Or you were like me, you saw it for the first time while you were in kindergarten.
Yeah. Well, that's a good time to show the kids.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that scar you for life?
When you see you chickens get their heads cut off.
Known me for a couple of years now, so I guess the answer would be yes.
Good explanation.
Yeah, but I do, although I also remember parts of that movie, like, I remember the thing, well, everybody remembers, you know, the first time they go into the factory and they've got that whole Candyland room, and I kept thinking, man, that's so much fun, I want to be there. And then you find out what happens if you accidentally fall into the chocolate river.
Yeah, bad things.
Yeah.
Bad things.
Oh, and then you also find out that in the original book by Roald Dahl, the Oompa Loompas were actually African slaves.
Yeah, they kind of had to edit that little ish detail, didn't they?
But they actually made it better. One of the weird things where the movie is actually better than the original book. But yeah, so there was that. Oh, and, you know, when you talk about Gene Wilder, you cannot not mention Mel Brooks and the classic films that he was in. So, you know, first, of course, was Young Frankenstein, which is a classic in just every sense of the word. Young still holds up.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. An entire movie in black and white and hysterically funny.
That's another movie where I saw references to it before I actually saw the movie.
Yeah. That movie dance still number. Holds up, too. That movie's well over, like, 50 years old now, and it's still amazingly funny. Damn your eyes! Too late.
on the wrist!
But the only movie that Gene Wilder was in that probably tops that is, of course, Blazing Saddles, which is just maybe the greatest comedy ever made.
Yeah, it's about 2 hours of just complete lunacy.
Yeah, just it takes so much piss out of the old school Western genre.
Yeah.
That's a movie I would love to see somebody try to do that in this modern era.
You could not get away with that.
Oh, I think if you let Matt Stone and Trey Parker do it, they could.
Yeah, if you could get.
I don't know. I don't think you can get away with punching a horse.
I don't mean make it exactly. I mean make like this era's version of that.
They'd make it work.
Idea.
Yeah. The thing about that movie is, okay, first of all, I just need to point something out. Whenever I specifically will complain about something like political correctness or SJWs, it will be in reference to a certain incident as the following. I once watched a cut of Blazing Saddles on AMC, the American Movie Classics channel, with all of the racial epithets bleeped out.
Yeah. So you were probably hearing bleeps every, like, 15 seconds.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm. See, that defeats the whole purpose of the movie.
Yeah.
Because the whole purpose of that movie is to show how stupid and moronic, you know, racism is. And also meant to be a reflection on the casual racism that existed back then.
Yeah.
You know, the part that all those singing cowboy movies kept out. You enjoyed all those train robberies and stuff on the movie screen, but you forgot that it was, you know, black people and Chinese immigrant labor who built those railroads in the first place.
Yeah.
And I also loved about how they went into Rock Ridge and it turns out that it's pretty much entirely inhabited by inbred hicks. Because did you notice everybody was Johnson?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just so many classic gags in that one.
Especially you know? The end.
Oh, yeah.
Just say, we'll just break the fourth wall with this.
Yep. Everything from, you know, the Mel Brooks playing the mayor, LePetitmane. That's classic. And, of course, Gene Wilder was, for those of you who don't know, Gene Wilder was not the original actor for that part. It was actually someone else, because the character was meant to be much older. And the person that came before Wilder only worked on there for like one day before he apparently passed out. And so they got Wilder to come in on very short notice, and he still managed to pull off an amazing performance.
Yeah.
It worked.
It did.
Him and, you know, his co-star just played off of each other so well.
John Wayne was the other guy.
Yeah.
Richard Pryor and John Wayne.
Yeah. That would actually be...
I can't say that wouldn't have worked.
No, it wouldn't have worked, but I honestly don't know if either one of them would have gotten out of that production alive. Because they would have killed each other by the end of it. Because Richard Pryor was Richard Pryor and John Wayne was a giant asshole.
Yeah.
I guess Johnny Carson and Gene Wilder were offered the Hedley Lamarr role.
But yeah, so it's unfortunate, but he left behind some amazing films. So he will be remembered for many generations to come.
The family statement about it was really nicely done. Basically saying that, let's see, we understand all... For all the emotional and physical challenges the situation presented, we have been among the lucky ones. This illness pirate, unlike in so many cases, never stole his ability to recognize those that were closest to him.
Yeah, that, by the way, he passed away. It was Alzheimer's, just in case anybody was curious.
Never stole his ability to recognize those that were closest to him, nor took command of his central, gentle, life-affirming core personality. The decision to wait until this time to disclose his condition wasn't vanity, but more so that the countless young children that would smile or call out to him, there's Willy Wonka, would not have to be then exposed to adult referencing illness or trouble and causing delight to travel to worry, disappointment, or confusion. He simply couldn't bear the idea of one less smile in the world.
Right, now you're going to get me all emotional. All right, so...
yeah, go watch one of his movies and celebrate the great work he did.
Yeah, the man was an amazing actor. So, moving on from there, just a quick little thing. Bill Nye. Bill Nye, the science guy, and the B team from Mythbusters are both going to get their own shows on Netflix.
Yep.
That's going to be good.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Nope.
Yeah, the show that the Mythbusters team is doing is called White Rabbit Project. It's going to start on December 9th.
Yeah.
And Bill Nye's... I guess it's going to be something of a continuation of the stuff he did on, you know, his PBS show. But perhaps a little bit more...
Adult.
Adult.
Yeah, a little more adult.
Because, unfortunately, scientific literacy is kind of lacking in the average American... Populous.
Yeah, I wonder where that comes from.
Bill Nye is going to teach the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's supposed to start next spring.
There's your title.
Yeah.
He said he's looking to do topics like climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, where is the list?
Climate change, probably evolution. I know that's going to be in there.
Vaccinations.
Important scientific topics that need to be have myths expelled.
Go toe to toe with people with anti-scientific claims, such as religious leaders, anti-vaxxers, and politicians.
Yeah, the good thing is, unlike Bill Nye is a guy who if you've ever seen him do one of those debates with one of those people, he is remarkably calm and patient. The man has the patience of a saint, really.
Yeah.
Because any other human being would have launched at them and tear out their throat with their teeth. I know I would.
Well, he knows he's right, so...
Yes.
He doesn't have... Yeah.
I guess we're going to have episodes on vaccinations, genetically modified foods, climate change. With the right science and good writing, we'll do our best to enlighten and entertain our audience.
Yeah.
Perhaps
if you ever watch the world a little. If you ever watch the, his, if you ever get a chance to watch the episodes from his own his old PBS show, he was really good at, you know, he was Carl Sagan for young people.
Mm-hmm.
Back when he did that show, and
yeah, show's a little bit tough to watch because it's full of 90s kids show stuff.
Yeah,
yes,
but it still does its job very well.
The part where he's actually there.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really well done.
Oh, yeah. He is the great explainer. He can take very complicated scientific concepts and make it easily digestible for the layman.
Yeah, his head is not as far up his ass as most people in that industry.
Like Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
And I like Neil deGrasse Tyson, for the record.
I've heard him described as the living embodiment of the word actually.
Yeah, that's pretty much that's accurate. So good stuff.
Yeah, so moving on from there, Freddie Mercury is getting his own asteroid. Why it took us this long, I don't know.
Yeah, well, this is kind of in response to his 70th birthday, which it would have been if he was, you know, alive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're giving him his own asteroid.
Yeah. Someday they'll give him his own planet.
Yeah.
Well, technically he kind of already does, but that was before him.
Yeah. Mercury. Unfortunately, it's not uninhabitable.
So yeah.
It's kind of a problem.
But yes, Freddie Mercury, lead dude from Queen.
One of the greatest vocalists ever.
You know? Yeah. Probably one of the greatest songwriters ever, too.
Yeah.
He wrote some amazing music. Of course, all four of the dudes in Queen wrote some great songs. So
yeah,
he's one of the best performers.
Yeah, he used to Queen show was like the absolute pinnacle back in the day, and that includes the late 70s and the 80s.
Yeah,
yeah, you could tell he was gay because he sure cared about.
Oh, he was flaming. Queen,
yeah.
Freddie Mercury was an amazing performer, but he was unbelievably gay.
Yep.
Although apparently he was actually bisexual.
Yeah.
But, so after that, we may have brought this up in another cast. Brock Turner. Brock Turner was a former... What was his college again?
Stanford.
Stanford student swimmer who basically sexually assaulted an unconscious girl behind a dumpster.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about this, yes.
Yes. And he only got, like, a 6-month sentence.
He's already out after 3.
Yeah. And so what happened after that, once the word got out... people started showing up at his house with guns and protest signs, including the greatest protest sign ever, which was, Pat, that's your cue.
Yeah. Basically a guy had a sign that said, if I rape Brock, will I only get 3 months? And this was the exclamation point on this sign was the fact that the guy was carrying an AR-15.
Yep. And there was all the graffiti drawn on the side, on the sidewalk, saying "Castrate your local rapist." So yeah, this people are rightfully pissed off.
Yeah.
Now, the question should be asked: is this just? You know, is it just for people to you know, take lethal weapons and, you know, have a rally outside of his home? And the answer to that would be, well, what other alternative is there?
Yep.
Because as a first world industrial nation that claims to base itself upon the rule of law, we have entrusted the inaction and defense of the law to our judicial system. And when that particular system does not give out specific appropriate justice or an appropriate punishment, you know, when we are based on a system based on the idea that actions have consequences, when the system that we've set up to do that fails, and yet you still believe in the idea that actions should have consequences, what other recourse is there?
And there's also the part of the story where the judge that handed out that sentence requested not to be on criminal trials anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, I mean,
like, well, it's a shame that didn't happen a little sooner.
Yeah, now, the thing is, I was watching The Young Turks, which I watch pretty religiously, and they were talking about this, and Cenk Uygur, of course, was being Cenk Uygur. He was like, guys, don't do the vigilante justice. That's a dark road to go down. You know, don't show up outside the guy with guns. And I'm like, and, you know, and I usually agree with Cenk Uygur, but I was like, Cenk, I get you, but what else are we supposed to do? You know,
you probably guess the race of these guys by the couple of things you said. Them having guns.
Yeah, they're all lily white with beards.
Yeah.
Because if it was a bunch of black guys with it, yeah, they wouldn't have been able to get away with it.
There's one guy that has a Guy Fawkes mask on his head.
Of course he does. But, look, you know, and another thing people have to understand, I want people to understand this. Rock Turner raped a woman, and there's no doubt about it. I mean, there were witnesses who saw it.
Chased him down. Tackled him.
There is no reason. There is, you know, when you declare a person guilty, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. There's no reasonable doubt here. No. It was 100% clear.
Yeah.
He only got a 6-month sentence.
Yeah.
Right now, there are Americans who are serving life sentences for possession of marijuana.
Yeah.
Can you take a wild guess of their socioeconomic status?
Usually black.
Poor, working class. Whereas Brock Turner, of course, being a rich, white, bourgeois fucktard, managed to get away with a horrible crime. He went to jail for, like, he was supposed to go to jail for 6 months. He only did 3, and he basically did 3 in what basically accounts to Club Fed.
I guess one of the good things is they closed the loopholes that allowed that sentencing to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
But that does, it doesn't really, it helps somewhat, but Brock Turner is still a free man.
It helps for the future.
And he can never go back to jail. Because you cannot try a person for the same crime twice. They could try civil court and get a bunch of money out of him.
Yeah.
But he's wealthy enough that wouldn't really put a dent.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it says here, states that those convicted of sexual assault cannot be sentenced to probation. The use of force during sexual assault automatically ensures a prison sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two big ones. It's a shame they weren't in place for probably one of the most high-profile cases they would have had in a while.
No. If the judicial system doesn't respect the rule of law, then why would you expect the civilian population to do the same? Just think over that for a little while.
Yeah.
So, moving on from that, we got some Crunchyroll news. Everybody knows Crunchyroll. It's everybody's favorite anime streaming webcaster. So, first things first, Crunchyroll is simulcasting the Persona 5 anime.
Which started this week.
Yeah. By the way,
to coordinate with the launch of the game in Japan.
Which, by the way, we'll be talking about that Sunday. It got reviews from Famitsu, and they were pretty good. We'll talk more about that Sunday. I don't want to spoil it. But they were good. Let's just say that. Yeah. So there's
that. I think they liked it.
Oh, yeah. So, and with that, on top of that, Crunchyroll has actually partnered up with Funimation. And they're going to bring you more anime.
Yeah. All of the anime.
Yeah, of the anime that Crunchyroll wasn't already doing, because at this point they kind of had all of it.
Yeah.
So
now Crunchyroll seems like the kind of thing that I really do want to subscribe to, because it's all of the anime.
Yeah,
it's
is.
All of it.
If there is a English dub of it that exists, it is on that website. Hmm. Now keep in mind that includes older anime where the dubs weren't exactly
good,
but they're there.
Yeah.
It's all of the anime, and it's good, and I'm just glad that something like Crunchyroll exists and is able to turn a profit, because
not just survive, but thrive.
Yeah, because there was a little while when we thought anime in America was dead.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when you could go to, like, a Best Buy or something, and there would be an anime section just bulging with DVDs of all kinds of series. Everything from, like, your big stuff like Dragon Ball to, like, really obscure shit like Burn Up W.
Yeah.
Stuff that we watched on VHS when we were younger.
Yeah.
In the case of Burn Up W in secret. But, yeah, and then the market kind of collapsed. Mm-hmm. And, we're lucky to have this stuff now.
Yeah.
And it's between this and spending like $100 on an Aniplex disc.
$100?
Well, I should say $100, but considering how fucking expensive they are.
Valid.
Yeah,
so. It's still valid.
Yeah, anime can still be really expensive to get physical.
Physical.
Just look at Fooly Cooly.
Oh god!
Six episodes, just the Blu-ray is like $30.
Yeah,
like, really? And up until recently, my only way of getting like old anime DVDs was that wasn't on Amazon was like at Movie Stop, and they recently went out of business. So
yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, part of Crunchyroll's success was that they offered that free service for a while.
Yeah.
Where you just, it was ad-supported, so you just go in and watch, and then you wanted to get rid of the ads, so you paid.
Yeah. And they, apparently people hate the ads enough that they are willing to pay.
Yeah. Well, it's like the ads just kind of, like, interrupt, so it kind of breaks up the flow of the show.
Yeah, it's not like a commercial break a normal commercial break. Like, it'll just pop up right in the middle, in mid-sentence.
Yeah.
Even though the shows have proper commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really take
inserted into them.
That's called Hulu style.
Yep.
All right. We'll just create an algorithm to figure it out. So they're
we'll
putting
make one.
So how all much right. of Funimation stuff were they putting on there?
Well, I believe
they put facts up on both Crunchyroll and Funimation's websites detailing what will happen with each subscription. They're not merging them outright into a single service, but they'll more or less be augmenting each other's services.
I think Cowboy Bebop was one of the first things they put up there.
Well, that's all you really need.
Yeah.
You know.
It's the crash course anyway.
Yeah.
One I'd like to see get up on there is Beck Mongolian Chop Squad, which is a Funimation show that they picked up, which is a weird show because it's a music show. And obviously that
music genre is really good.
Yeah, because in the Japanese version, they play "I've Got a Feeling" from the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, no way they're going to license that for an English version.
Nope.
So it's a different song. So it's like both the sub and the dub are legitimate, good versions of that show. That people should actually watch if they ever put it up for free.
All right. So with that, we have a bunch of Magic the Gathering products. So, Pat, take it away.
Yeah, it's announcement season again. And they list off 6 or 7 new products, but there are 2 main notables that I want to zero in on. The first one is a Monket block, which will start at the end of April with a Monket itself, and then its expansion, Hour of Devastation, in July. First off, fuck yes for an ancient Egyptian setting in Magic. It fits it like a glove.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what kind of unique mechanics they come up with for it. Especially on the heels of the upcoming Kaladesh block, which launches at the end of this month. And that's going to be very... almost... It's very artifact-driven, but in a sort of sci-fi fantasy sense, kind of like modern Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
So, the way they set up each block these days is to interact directly with the two that in each direction as rotation goes. So it'll be really interesting to see how they follow up on Kaladesh with a Monket. And apparently it's a plane that is ruled by one of the longest running recurring characters in Magic, Nicol Bolas. So he's going to be reprinted at some point. One of the major villains of the series as a whole. The other product is Modern Masters 3. And I'm really looking forward to this one because I've been getting into Modern. As I said at the top of the show, I'm putting the finishing touches on one deck already that I've really put a lot of time and energy into. Will be really interesting to see what gets reprinted this time, because Modern Masters 2 was looked at as kind of a step back from the first set that came out in 2013. But the entire point is to get a whole bunch of these cards reprinted so Modern becomes more accessible for people.
Yeah.
And I think they realize after Modern Masters 2, which was kind of a step back, and then Eternal Masters, which was supposed to be the same thing for Legacy, but was completely irrelevant given the fact that the reserved list still exists. they've really got to come out swinging for the fences with Modern Masters 3, so I'm expecting a really good set.
Yeah.
And for Modern Masters 3, basically anything goes from 2003 to now. So that's a pretty good pool of cards to pick from. They can make a hell of a good set out of it.
Awesome. All right, then. With that, we've also got a couple of MMA things to talk about. Whose was this?
It was me.
Okay. All right, take it away, Pat.
Yeah, GSP. George St. Pierre looks like he's going to be coming back pretty soon. Wants to make his return at UFC 206 here in a couple months.
How long has he been out?
Almost 3 years.
Yeah, that's going to be tough to see if he's still kept himself in shape.
Yeah. He's named a few possible opponents in Tyrone Woodley, Nick Diaz, and Demian Maia. So he's not shying away from good competition. And hopefully his return to the octagon goes better than Anderson Silva's did.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it didn't. It wasn't brought on by the same kind of situation. I mean, he didn't have a career-threatening injury inside the octagon.
Yeah.
So. So it's all basically a matter of conditioning and preparation, really. Just
Well, 2 months. I mean, is a good amount of time if he's already been working.
Yeah. So they just need to announce an opponent for him so he can do a proper camp.
Yeah, we'll probably. You know, I would guess if it is going to happen, we'll probably get the announcement at the next UFC or before.
I would expect before. Well, the next UFC is tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's so. UFC 203. So that would actually be a good time to do it.
Yep.
All right. So, okay, that was the thing about George St. Pierre.
Yep.
Okay. So, here's another one. Big John McCarthy has been making a good, been making a good case for creating a new MMA weight class.
A few, actually.
Yeah.
Because so far, like, all of your big divisions in the weight classes go from 135 to 205.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this sudden jump from 205 to anything goes up to 265. Mm-hmm. And just a second, I had to kill a window there because it had an auto-playing video that was distracting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have a jump straight up from 205 to 265, which for the most part, I mean, the heavyweight division has been pretty well open once you get up to that point. But I think on the lower end, you're seeing some guys get screwed over, guys who may be fighting at around 225, 235.
Hmm.
Getting in there with guys who maybe have to cut to make the 265 limit.
Hmm.
And to that point, I could see the benefits of there being maybe a 225 or 235 class to serve as kind of a stopgap.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking there should probably actually be, you know, there should be a 225, 235-ish division, and probably one even lower as well, around the 165, probably pretty good.
They've talked about right now that's the weird jump in the mix, because you've got your lightweight at 155, welterweight jumps up to 170, and then middleweight jumps up to 185. And so there has been talk of wanting to split welterweight into two divisions, but I'm not sure if that's going to get much traction. Even though I can see it making certain weight cuts rather awkward when jumping between divisions.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see if this gets any traction, and hopefully it does, because as much as it's matured in recent years, I still think heavyweight is a little bit more disjointed than other divisions. And so maybe sorting that out a bit would be to the UFC's benefit and to MMA in general.
Yeah. All right. Well,
plus so, you've got guys probably going down to 205 who have no business doing it.
Yeah.
Just because they're too small to fight at heavyweight.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. Well, I guess to cap off this show tonight, I wanted to bring this up. So, Doug Walker, aka the Nostalgia Critic, this week he released one of his what's known as his Nostalgia Critic editorial videos, where instead of talking about a specific movie or TV show, he just talks about a general topic. And in this one, he brought up a question: is weird the new brilliant? And did you guys get a chance to watch this?
I did not, but the question is a good one.
Okay. So essentially he's bringing up the fact that we have all of these great TV shows, mostly cartoons, who from their very get-go are just bizarre, who have just really bizarre concepts, just weird, you know, Adventure Time, Steven Universe. He even brings up a BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
And he asked the question, you know, why exactly, you know, we've got all these weird shows, and yet on top of that, they turn out to actually be really good. And the question is, you know, he's asking, how is it that this has happened? You know, how did we suddenly get filled with all these weird and yet great shows? And I actually can kind of answer that, because all of these shows actually have a common formula, I've noticed, which is they take the original concept, and oh, and he also, on top of that, he also brought up My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, which also fits this. And what he did is, and this is how I explain it. The secret that all these shows has is they take their original bizarre premise, you know, and just play it straight for like the first, like for the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, as the series goes on, they slowly but surely sort of pull back the curtain and reveal more of what's going on in the background, and showing that there's actually a lot more happening under the hood than what seems to be happening superficially.
Yeah.
And so, like, take, for example, Friendship is Magic, for example. Friendship is Magic, when it came out, nobody expected it to do anything, because it was basically the newest incarnation of a franchise that basically existed just to sell toys.
Yeah.
But what happened is, as the show went on, people discovered that there was actually some real talent behind it. And part of what they did is they would do a bunch of episodes that were basically slice of life episodes, where you got to know the characters more as individuals, and they're just dealing with regular stuff. And then they would start bringing up the big story arcs, and, you know, big villains and stuff. And suddenly, you know, it would just, it's kind of like what I like to call the Dragon Ball formula, where you give just enough information and leave just enough things blank that it lets other people sort of fill in the blanks on their own.
Yeah.
And there's a real balancing act to it, but if you pull it off, it's pretty much a formula for success, because we've got Adventure Time, we've got Steven Universe, both who do the exact same thing, and they both have basically done it beautifully. You know, and BoJack Horseman, when that show premiered, it just, nobody really understood what the big deal was. It just didn't make any sense. It was just this weird thing where it's like, okay, here's this dude, he's a horse, he was a child star, and what else?
Yeah.
But as the show went on, people started to notice that it started to get a lot more emotionally deep, but without losing any of the humor.
Yeah.
Which is why it's kind of a critical darling. And so really this is just sort of a thing to sort of ponder, you know, and I actually have two specific influences that I think has done this. The first one, the most obvious, is probably anime. You know, a lot of these people these are a lot of the folks who, you know, grew up when anime was first becoming a big thing in the States. And so they went off to, you know, into the cartoon industry, and they started putting that influence into their work. And because of that, we got, well, first and foremost, Avatar The Last Airbender, which, again, is another thing that goes into this, that and The Legend of Korra. The other example I would point out would probably be shows like Twin Peaks, because Twin Peaks pretty much is this dead on. It's a show that, you know, starts out as like your standard crime drama with that just so happens to have these kooky characters, and then slowly but surely reveals itself to be something a lot more.
Yeah.
And that form of storytelling has just finally become the it thing.
Yeah. I don't think it's weird is the new brilliant, though. I think he's kind of missing the real thing. That's the brilliant part. It's subtlety and sleight of hand.
Yeah.
That's what's brilliant about these shows. They bring you in with a concept that might be just completely ridiculous, and then just slowly but surely show you that there's a lot there that you didn't see.
Right. Adventure Time in particular is a great example of this because, you know, Adventure Time, when it starts out, it makes no goddamn sense whatsoever. It really doesn't.
But you watch it because it's like...
You're like, it's what like, the... what the... It's the what the fuck factor. It's like, this is just so fucking crazy. I have to keep watching this just to make sense of it.
Yeah. But, and then you get about 5 or 6 episodes in and you're like, oh.
Yeah. Turns out there's some really dark shit happening underneath all of this. Granted, it actually takes a couple of seasons for the really dark shit to start showing up. But they do good enough hints of it early on. And then Steven Universe is another example. And Steven Universe also has the fact that it also has great music to go along with it, too. Which, I mean, Adventure Time has some good songs in it, too, but not quite as memorable. Of course, part of the reason, Steven Universe has such great music is because its creator also happened to be one of the big music people on Adventure Time. So, there you go. She's the one who wrote the Adventure Time theme. So, and the fact that, music is actually a big part of the show's overall theme. Yeah. And then, of course, what also makes it a big deal is that it was one of the first shows, along with Legend of Korra, to sort of start bringing in to basically break the LGBT taboo in children's programming.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Korra had to do it kind of after the fact at the very end because of what the creators were working with Nickelodeon, but Steven Universe is able to kind of get away with it more due to the fact that technically the gems are genderless.
Yeah.
They just so happen to have female forms because that's just the one they take.
Yeah.
That whole, and another really good example is probably Gravity Falls. Gravity Falls. Have any of you ever seen Gravity Falls?
Not yet.
You need to see Gravity Falls. Gravity Falls is this to a T. Gravity Falls is literally the Disney animated equivalent to Twin Peaks. It really is. And that's saying something. Yes, so I'm going to leave it on there. Did anybody else want to say something?
No.
I'm good.
Okay, well then. Once again, thank you for listening in to our little show, listening to us at the Let's Weekenders. Once again, I would like to remind you, if you would like to write into the show and ask us questions or whatever... you can catch us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's Let's, L-E-T-S, Weekenders, W-E-E-K-E-N-D-E-R-S, @gmail.com. We will be more than happy to read what you have to say on air. And so with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for the rest of the Let's Weekenders, I would like to say... Get some sleep out there, folks. Good night.